I'll begin with the reading from the book of Genesis. We're using the Revised Standard Version. The Lord said to Abram, "Go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you. I will make of you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you. Him who curses you, I will curse. By you, all the families of the earth shall bless themselves." That's the beginning of chapter 12 of the book of Genesis. First 11 chapters have been a strange, mythical, compressed history of the world, from Adam to Noah, to finally to one family, among many other families, and to one human being mentioned as part of that family, the man called Abram. And this passage begins very bluntly. The Lord spoke to Abram. Literally, spoke the Lord to Abram. And there's no explanation of how this happened, or where it happened, really. Somewhere in Haran. Somewhere in the place where he is. But nothing specific. There's no explanation about how Abraham knew that God was speaking to him. Or even that it was God. It is Yahweh, the Lord, who speaks. It's very blunt, it's very simple, it's very plain. And yet, the question of why he spoke to Abraham is the question of why God spoke to anyone, to humanity. Whether we are in contact with God at all. Does God speak to us? If he does, began with this man Abraham, 4,000 years ago. After the passage I've read, Abraham goes out, becomes a little more complicated. So Abraham went as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Abraham was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. Abraham took Sarai, his wife, and Lot, his brother's son, and all the possessions which they had gathered, and the persons that they had gotten in Haran. And they set forth to go to the land of Canaan. When they had come to the land of Canaan, Abraham passed through the land to the place at Shechem, to the oak of Moreh. At that time the Canaanites were in the land. Then the Lord appeared to Abraham and said, "To your descendants I will give this land." So he built there an altar to the Lord who had appeared to him. Thence he removed to the mountain on east of Bethel, and pitched his tent with Bethel on the west, and Ai on the east. There he built an altar to the Lord and called on the name of the Lord. And Abraham journeyed on, still going towards the Negev. This is the word of the Lord. I've finished the passage now. As you can hear, it's become much more complicated. There are people now, there are families, there are relations, there are friends, there are places. There's also, for anyone who knows the future history, what will happen, the Canaanites in the land. And of course, these Canaanites will lose the land to the Israelites, but not in the lifetime of Abraham. It's now become complicated. It's become messy. It's become like human life. Human life is messy because we are one human being among many. So go back to the start of this passage, back to this terribly simple phrase, "The Lord spoke to Abraham." Once again, we ask why. For us, reasons are always messy, complicated things. We like to have reasons. We like to explain ourselves. Remember, Jimmy Cagney, the actor, was on British television. An interviewer asked him why he'd stopped acting, why he'd retired to his farm. And he said, "No reason." An interviewer looked quite nonplussed. "You're supposed to have reasons." Of course, he could have said, "I wanted to." That's a reason. That's not what we like. We like complications. We like lots of things. We like to think that we can always justify what we do, always explain it. Because of that, it becomes hard to contemplate God and his divine nature. Because God is much simpler than we are. God is perfect simplicity. I'll say that again. God is perfect simplicity. God is purity of being. In a sense, we could say God had no reason to speak to Abraham. No reason outside of himself, that is. No reason which compelled him to speak to Abraham. God spoke to Abraham because he didn't need to. Because he simply chose. He could have spoken to anyone. He could have talked to anyone. He could have addressed anyone. That's an extraordinary fact to contemplate in itself. He could have spoken to someone in Africa, or Asia, or the American continent, north or south, even in Australia, to the Aborigines. He could have chosen. And perhaps in some quiet, special way, he spoke to too many people indeed. But not like he spoke to Abraham. Abraham he called. Abraham he made promises to. And Abraham accepts his promises. He responds. Second part of the reading, Abraham builds an altar. Now that's a pious thing to do, on the face of it. Build an altar to the Lord. Worship. Praise. That's good. It's good to pray. It's good to talk to God. But so often in the history of Israel, so often in the Old Testament, many of the things which will serve God's will, like altars and kings and prophecy, begin because of the failings of human beings. At the root of them, there's something not quite right. God makes it right. God makes use of human beings' limitations, or sins, or selfishness. And I think Abraham's building the altar has something of that selfishness in it, something at least of that limitation of the human being. He's not content to wait for God to speak. The altar gives him a certain control. Religion gives him a certain control. As I say, eventually God takes that up and makes use of it. He does give us control. He did say to the apostles, what you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. What you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. That's giving us lots of control, lots of power, lots of say. It's making us very responsible. But here Abraham chooses to build the altar. God doesn't say build an altar to me. God doesn't say worship me. God doesn't say make sacrifice to me. But human beings do like to be in control. And that's part of our problem, part of our limitation, part of our sin. Because once again, it's about being a single human being among many. It's a very obvious truth. We are one human being. We have one life. We live in one place. We live in one time. But we do seek to extend ourselves. And some of the monsters of history have been exactly that, people who tried to extend their own self over humanity, to have power, control. And the great paradox is that far from extending themselves, far from making themselves more, all they do is make everything that could complete them and make them grow mere extensions of themselves, mere ego. It's a great poem by Walter de la Mare about Napoleon. It's called Napoleon. C.S. Lewis quotes it somewhere. It's a great example of this. This Napoleon, as is clear from this simple short poem, marching through Russia, presumably retreating from Moscow after the great failure. Napoleon says, "What is the world, O soldiers? It is I. This incessant snow, this northern sky. Soldiers, this solitude through which we go is I." Marvelous poem. Napoleon has merely extended himself. He's not become powerful at all. Even the world is just a projection of himself. And in so doing, he fails to become more. He becomes less. All you have is yourself, you don't have much. But we are called to be relational selves, selves that reach out to others. And Abraham himself is called to be a father. but not of a people who are merely from himself, that he has created, that he has given to the world. And that's why God has to work a miracle at the beginning to show this. Abraham's wife is old and fertile. And out of that infertility, out of that barrenness, out of that desert, God brings life. Every Israelite must know that they are the children of a miracle, the children of a power which is beyond human power. As we too know the greatness of the virgin birth, which shows that God is a master of life. God gives life. I'll now read the Gospel. It's the Holy Gospel according to Matthew, chapter 7, verses 1 to 5. Jesus said to his disciples, "Judge not that you be not judged. For with the judgment you pronounce, you will be judged. And the measure you give will be the measure you get. Why do you see the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, 'Let me take the speck out of your eye,' when there is the log in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye." And this is the Gospel of the Lord. Rather old-fashioned translation, but quite short. Now this is true about being yourself. In a strange way, if we don't see ourselves, we are locked in ourselves. Because we look out from ourselves, from our own understanding, our own knowledge, our own capacity. If we don't look at ourselves first before we look at others, all we see is shadows and images of our own self projected on them. We think others are only as good as they correspond to what we think they should be. In other words, to what we think we are. In effect, we limit them. And we limit ourselves because we're not growing. We're not discovering the otherness of people that makes us grow. It's like the window you look out of has to be clean before you can see anything. Otherwise, all you see is the dirt on your own window. And Christ calls these people hypocrites. Hypocrite's a funny word. It actually comes from the New Testament, because in the New Testament and before the New Testament, it didn't mean hypocrite. It meant actor, someone who pretends to be something before others. It meant literally actor, an actor in theatre, because a hypocrite literally is someone who stands before the judges. In Greek drama, the actors are always judged by professional judges. We have critics, which are even worse. We are pretending to be something before others when we judge others. We are deluded about ourselves. We are not ourselves when we judge others. That sounds a bit strange. It sounds a bit complex. But it's very simple. It's the sort of knowledge of ourselves which is difficult to have, in the way that looking at the tip of our own nose is difficult to do. Nose is always before you, and you're always before you. Always before yourself. But the self you think you are is not the self you are. And looking at other people is a failure to look at herself, to be herself, to be one human being among many. And though this gospel is not designed or picked to be connected to Genesis, there is that connection. Abraham is one man among many. And others that come from him come through the power of God. And he accepts this. He has his failings, building the altar, trying to acquire land in the place he's been promised by his business capacity, as he will do later, rather than waiting for God. He fails. On the whole, he's happy to be himself. When Abraham is happy to be Abraham, then he can become Abraham. God gives him the new name, which is given to him. A gift from God. And that's why God chose Abraham. Because Abraham was happy to be chosen. Happy to live by God's will. And happy to let others be themselves. happy to receive the gift of God. And those who follow him, who succeed to those who receive the birthright as gift. His grandson Jacob, of course, is a very slippery character. In the end, he receives his gift. Oh, his cunning is of no avail. It's God who gives him what he receives. We too will be happy and better people. And more, what we are. We accept this too, accept the gift. Accept what it is to be one human being among many. Live the life God gives you. Live in the time God has placed you in. And be a father to nations, because God is with us, and God loves us, and makes us who we truly are.